because of the short-termism, it's almost creating feedback loops where CMOs are sometimes doing things a little bit more tactically to build their resume sometimes, unfortunately.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and this is Future Proof.
So the world of marketing is shifting pretty broadly, and that's why I wanted to speak to someone who can speak broadly to the future of marketing. Enter John Connors. He started Boathouse in 2001 after years at the biggest agencies in New England and the world, and he wanted to bring a new type of performance-mindedness to the agency business. He previously served as a part of the McCann World Group management team, at the time the largest agency in the world, and I'm really excited to hear his perspective. So, John, welcome to Future Proof.
Jeremy, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you know, first things first, what I'd like to ask everybody just to begin, who are you and what do you do on a day-to-day basis? How do you define yourself?
Yeah. So I think, first off, I define myself as a father and a husband, and then I get into the advertising marketing side of myself. So one of the reasons I chose to start my own company was so I could be home at night for dinner with my kids and my wife. So that sort of is job one for me. On the other side, I almost embarrassingly like to think about myself as sort of an academic around the marketing side. I really love the strategy side of the business, the research side of the business, and how marketing is changing. And so increasingly, now that I'm 30 plus years in the business, trying to really use all those years of experience to sort of apply more strategy, more thinking to what's going on in our space, what's going on with CMOs, what's going on with our company, but being really unselfish about it and trying to find new ways to help people.
So I think, yeah, there's obviously a lot there. And I think that obviously we're trying to always think about what the future looks like. I mean, I think in some ways it's probably helpful to take a little bit of a step back, you know, and think about these marketing leaders, the CMOs that we're talking about. And, you know, how has the role of the CMO shifted over the past few years, maybe to take a quick look back?
Yeah, I think right now, CMOs are having a hard time. It's part of the reason we stepped in and to try and do some research because, you know, as an agency, we work for the CMO. And if the CMO is not respected, then by nature, we're not respected. So if we want to be more respected as a company and as an industry, we have to help the CMOs be more successful. And so what you've seen is since 2009, CMOs' tenure has been declining. They've been losing a little bit of time and respect, I think, with each year. So now the median for a CMO is 22 to 24 months, basically 2 years in the job. So there's real issues developing. And I think the other indicator we look at is how many are invited to board meetings. About 30% of CMOs are invited to board meetings. So their tenure is having trouble. They're not getting invited to board meetings. And we're trying to get to the root cause of what's causing this decline. At the same time, that kind of marketing has never been more important, right? Because of what you can do with social, what you can do with mobile, what you can do with digital. Marketing's becoming increasingly important, but the CMO's getting challenged and we're trying to get to the bottom of that.
So I just want to challenge you on one thing, because I think that it's a thing that I hear a lot from people. I mean, obviously marketing can be a huge differentiator. You don't have a Twitter handle, Jera Marketer, if you don't really believe in marketing.
Yeah.
But why do you feel that marketing is more important than ever before? And I ask because I think that there are some people who kind of say, well, you know, the customer can look into the product and see whether or not the product's actually good, better than ever before. So under that logic, maybe the product's more important than ever before. And then, you know, there are all these other things that are important. So are those some things that, not to say that those things are important or not, but doesn't the rise of thinking about all these other things sometimes diminish, you know, the amount of time people are spending thinking about marketing?
No, I think it's a fair point. I think I probably use the classic definition of marketing. I think, and to your point, I think there's a lot more transparency. There's a lot more consumer visibility. But I think in the classic definition of marketing, you know, it's both the actual community, the marcom parts, but it's also the product, it's the pricing, it's distribution strategies, it's the experience, all those variables. And I think when you look at the importance of all those variables to what you're getting at, to that transparency, to that visibility, to that consumer, the empowered consumer, I think the marketer has the CMO has a real opportunity and a growth opportunity because now you have to deal with experience across all those channels. You have to deal with product across all those channels. And I think the ability to play bigger versus the ability to play smaller will define whether the CMO can capture that. Does that add up for you?
That makes a lot of sense. I think it's just a matter of thinking about marketing and the way that I've always thought about it, which is that it's this broad thing where you have to be, I mean, obviously each organization needs different things, but at the same time, you probably need to be relatively broad to be a CMO for a typical company, unless that's a company that has, you know, 80% of its eggs in one basket.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think you do have to be broad. You have to think like a portfolio manager, not like a vertical specialist. And I think that one of the pieces in our research, the CEO has sort of reinforced in our data anyway, the importance of marketing to growth and performance and innovation. So they're seeking that from marketing. Whether they're getting it or not is one of the bigger questions, but they're definitely seeking that.
Another thing that I'm kind of curious about is that, you know, you mentioned obviously the tenure of these CMOs is going down, but at the same time isn't, and please by all means correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm kind of getting the sense that tenures everywhere are down for various reasons. So are there particular, you know, titles where people are spending more time than CMOs? And isn't this, it basically, isn't it just a sign of the times overall?
Yeah, I don't, that's not what the, you know, we sort of rely heavily on the Spencer Stuart data for the C-suite. And that's not, you know, the CEO is growing, other members of the C-suite are growing. So I think there is a particular problem happening at the CMO level right now. And again, not that it's unsolvable. And it's since 2009, it's not forever. But it's just a trend that I personally wish was getting a little more attention in the space. You know, it doesn't get that much discussion. We've done a process of collecting every CMO study done in the last 2 years by all, you know, a lot of really smart people, the Forresters and the Gartners and all the big thought leaders, Deloitte, Fuqua, like just all of them in all one place. But what's interesting is it's a lot of CMOs talking to CMOs or doing best practices off of each other. And for a group of people that spends a living studying the consumer, they don't spend maybe enough time, is our theory, thinking about their own consumers inside their companies. They spend so much looking outside, but a little time, just a small percentage spent looking inside their companies would serve them well as they think about all the stakeholders they have to serve.
Another thing that I think is interesting that I've been following over the last few years is there was definitely a bit of a movement towards having these heads of growth and people just talking about growth and lead generation. I saw some of those roles report to a chief revenue officer and CFOs even, and in some cases, not necessarily fall under marketing. But that was confusing to me because to me, that's performance marketing. That's just the stuff that you can quantify, the stuff that's a little bit closer to sales. And then at the same time, I've heard a lot of people saying that brand marketing is resurgent, and there's a lot of evidence out there that building a strong brand actually really helps increase the bottom line overall. Where do you fall on that spectrum? Do you think that both of those are equally important? Is one going to be more important than the other in the future?
I'm with you. I don't buy the chief growth officer versus the chief marketing officer. It's more of a stunt than an idea that sort of plays out long term. I think the chief marketing officer, whether you give it a different name or whatever, I think should be in control of that position. I think they have the experience to be in control of that position. I think there's some things they can do a little better. And then to your brand resurgence point, I agree. I think one of the things we've been increasingly doing is talking to companies about narratives a little bit more versus brands. But it's sort of slightly different, but I think we're seeing that brand or narratives drive a sort of economic impact for companies. They drive valuation for companies. And so I think as a result of thinking that you could just go to performance marketing and ignore your brand, I think you're seeing sort of the negative impacts of that. And so there's a resurgence sort of because of that, the valuation implications and because of the revenue generation implications.
That makes a lot of sense. What do you think if you want to be the marketing leader of tomorrow, what are some of the things that need to be top of mind for you in terms of topics? Obviously, you know, you have to know specifics and what particular industry are you getting into, but what are some of the topics that you would advise somebody, the aspiring CMO of tomorrow, to try to master or at the very least get a good understanding of?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pieces that you would expect. I think there's a lot of momentum around AI and metaverse and all the kind of new sexy things, right? But to me, it's a pretty old fashioned piece that a lot of people are missing. And it's about relationships. And we've sort of at a really simple level, just sort of trying to get people to think in terms of two really disciplined buckets. One is think in terms of marketing management, right? Like the classic disciplined marketing management IQ. And you have to be great at that. And that includes getting modern on all the latest, newest things. The second one, though, is the one that I think we believe people are missing far too often. And it's in some ways a simple one, but it's the relationship IQ. Like, how good are the relationships that you've built with the C-suite and the board? I was talking to a client yesterday, and you know, the marketing team, I'll give him full credit for this thought. The marketing team probably touches more people in the organization than any other member of the C-suite. And if you're not good at building relationships, you're going to lose, because everyone's going to talk to the CEO and the board about the fact that you're under delivering for them. The other piece is we ask CEOs whether they trust the CMO, whether they really believe that the CMO has their best interests at heart. And there's a trust problem, and it's only 20% of CEOs said they trusted their CMOs, or they believe that the CMO puts their interests first. And so, you know, the dynamics, if as a CEO, you don't trust your CMO is really looking out for you and looking out for your back, it's going to be hard to build that relationship. It's going to be hard to get the credibility you need to execute. And so you can just think of it as those two buckets. If everyone can be disciplined on the marketing management, and there's no shortage of smart people on that, but also be really disciplined on the relationship side and really sweating the details and all the stakeholders, I think they can be much more successful.
It almost makes me think, and I don't know if this is right or not, but it almost makes me think that being a subject matter expert in the world of marketing is held against you, because marketers aren't often trusted by the outside world. And does that wind up changing the way in which they're perceived internally?
Yeah, I think it's something different. We're seeing some new data now. So we asked 150 CEOs questions about, well, the simple one question was, 80% of them believe the job is more complex now than it's ever been as CEO. And the reason behind that complexity is because from one side of their world, there's more issues hitting them than ever before, right? They have pandemics, and they have climate change, and they have race and equity issues, and, right? The list just keeps going on. And so there's a multiplier effect on issues that are hitting the CEO. There's also a multiplier effect from the other side of different stakeholder and audience groups hitting, elected officials, regulatory officials, employees, obviously, because of the employee challenges now, community challenges, investor challenges, Wall Street challenges, shareholder challenges, media companies are coming at them, right? And so if you're the CEO, none of them sort of grew into the job expecting that much pressure from both sides. The CMO, back to this relationship point, can be a real asset in managing that. But if the CMO sort of plays it more from, here are all the marketing channels, here's the messaging, let me do my job, versus let me really be a first line of defense for you, the CEO, they're not going to be as successful, right? So if you don't create sort of that empathy with what your CEO and board are dealing with, you immediately go down a peg. And so I think it's a little less because of sort of that distrust of marketing, and more because they're walking in a little bit more as the expert and then maybe not listening and building that relationship carefully enough. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It's interesting, though, because, you know, when you talk about, and you're right, how important the EQ aspects of the job are, I think there's another element, which is, how do you know what subject matter expertise you need to have yourself and or to build in-house versus looping in the right people to help you build what you need to build. And I think that to some extent, this is where agencies come in. And I know as a former agency owner that, you know, you field all types of inquiries, but when you're getting a call from a CMO, what are they? Well, I guess let me backtrack even for a second. If you were a CMO, how do you make a determination of what you should partner with an external resource versus what you need to build in-house as a core competency?
Yeah, so, you know, I believe, I'll give this credit to, it was an old client, old CEO of a private jet company who was a past BCG partner, and he would say to me, I want to pay you to solve the hard problems and the new problems. And I want to sort of inside, I want to solve the problems that I can scale up staff for. I don't want to pay a premium to solve those problems. And so from a business standpoint, the way we think about it is we always want to be solving the next hard problem and get the client to sort of internalize all the capabilities that are a little bit more predictable, right? And because we can, because we deal with multiple clients, you know, 30, 40 clients, we can be solving hard problems and then they can bring in people to execute on the more predictable problems. And so so to me, I go looking for partners on those hardest problems and then kind of staff up internally on those more predictable ones. High value, lower value.
Yeah, I think that that's a good framework for thinking about it. And then, you know, the other key thing is just in terms of the inquiries that you're receiving. I always thought it was interesting because as an agency owner, one of the things that I love to kind of do is see where the market was going based off of what types of keywords and inquiries are more frequent this year versus last year. So, you know, based off of that, what are some of the things, you know, you mentioned narrative, what are some of the other things that might be mentioned by a client now that wouldn't have been mentioned a few years ago?
I think you're right. I think two parts of that. One is, I think everyone's obsessed with performance now because I think people connect that as sort of a way to protect themselves, you know? And so we see performance in a lot of flavors and a lot of variations. Sometimes it's top line performance, sometimes it's digital performance, sometimes it's valuation, sometimes, you know? So I think we see a real growth in the number of sort of performance inquiries. And then you also see sort of new inquiries on the flavor of the month stuff. So different AI inquiries, metaverse inquiries, you know, so like you start to see kind of the new stuff because everyone wants to make sure they stay sexy. I think the piece that's interesting is the inquiries change a lot for us when the CEO and the CMO are in the room versus just when the CMO or a director of marketing is in the room. And they become, to oversimplify, they tend to be a little bit more tactical and a little bit more vertical the lower you get. And they tend to be more strategic and big picture the higher up you get, right? And so I think it's good insight for CMOs to just keep sort of almost behaving like CEOs when they go looking versus getting overly tactical would be my guidance.
Which, I mean, I think makes a lot of sense if you think about it. That's just like an alignment issue. If you're going to basically ask for a certain type of campaign or a certain type of assistance with implementing something, and that's not exactly what the CEO wants, and if they're going to, you know, they're not going to be as happy with you because you are kind of bringing the organization in a slightly different direction than where their North Star is.
Totally. And I think what's multiplying that, Jeremy, is the, what is, because of the short-termism, it's almost it's creating feedback loops where people are sometimes doing things a little bit more tactically to build their resume sometimes, unfortunately. You know, sometimes we'll do a cynical test, which is we'll put a shiny object out there versus something more strategic. And you're seeing increasingly clients, not just clients, I think everybody in the world is thinking about their resume sometimes a little too much versus
absolutely
back versus the company. I think it goes back, you used the word EQ a minute ago, and I think it's such an important word in the space right now. I just think one sort of really high profile client, past client, used to have a really simple strategy for success. She would talk about if the CEO's top three priorities are my top three priorities, right? And she became one of the most powerful leaders in the country, corporate leaders in the country on that premise, right? You just think it's such a simple model. Do you wake up every day with the CEO's top three priorities front and center in your mind, or do you sort of dismiss those priorities subtly? And I think the difference of people who can just make that simple EQ test work, I promise you the tenure will be higher for those people.
I think that's a really good point. I wanted to make sure, since I know we don't have that much more time left, I did want to ask you, it's inevitable. You know, you can't go through a conversation too long without mentioning the word COVID or pandemic or anything. And you know, I feel like marketing has transformed in a lot of different ways, and some of which, you know, that are probably permanent. But I'm curious, from your perspective, what are some of the ways that marketing has most likely changed or transformed for, you know, for the long term as a result of the pandemic?
Yeah, one of the ones that you've read and I'm reading about is, we did this interesting exercise a month or two ago. We took the top 10 most valuable SaaS companies in the world, the Salesforces, the Zooms, and the Adobes of the world, and we put all their investor presentations in one folder and just all sort of spent a lot of time studying what's the parallels, that what are the most important, most valuable SaaS companies in the world all talking about to their investors. And the pattern that jumps off the page is digital transformation. Seven of the 10 in their investor deck within the first five pages referenced digital transformation as the biggest driver of their companies. And I think what is happening as a result of that, if you go look at BCG, Bain, McKinsey's homepages, they're all selling digital transformation, right? And they're going to be the consultant that's going to get you there. I think what's happening as a result of digital transformation is everybody's kind of going into that pool of money and thinking about who's going to, so you got the CTOs in there now. Oh, the CTO's always been in there on digital transformation, obviously, but you got everybody feeding out of that trough about who's going to be in control of the customer experience, who's going to be in control of the digital product, who's going to be in control, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think now it's a, you know, marketing could come out the other side a touch weaker if a bunch of marketing's traditionally assets that they own are no longer owned by marketing. And so how marketers approach digital transformation, how they help lead their organizations, how they help their CEOs create more value through digital transformation, I think is going to dictate a lot on the other side in terms of what their power base looks like.
It is very interesting how everything old is new again, because a lot of what you're talking about, yes, there are a lot of technologies that are new, but ultimately some of the people management, the ability to work across different parts of a organization, you know, like a lot of this stuff, just the idea of innovation in general and figuring out how to do things more efficiently and in a better way. I mean, that stuff has been kind of part of humanity since time immemorial. So in some ways it's like, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah, that's why in some way, totally agree. And I think that, you know, it's not that sexy to talk about relationship IQ or EQ, but I think it's a really simple fix. I mean, if you don't have trust in an organization, and if people are thinking short time or kind of thoughts, you know, that tenure just keeps eroding, right? And so just the fundamentals of relationship, the fundamentals of trust. I think it's simple stuff, but a lot of people don't spend enough time thinking about it or working it.
And the bright, shiny object thing that you talked about before, and I know that you've written about this, to me is a really interesting aspect of it, because it's almost like this little dopamine rush where, you know, you're really happy that you're mentioned, you know, like on the front of a trade publication. But then if it didn't really permeate the minds of, you know, your consumers, your stakeholders long term, then does that really get you elevated? Does that really get you into the boardroom? And, you know, it sounds like and not to put words in your mouth, but that the answer is no, because those things are very short term. Those are things that are maybe resume boosters and not necessarily thinking about the company's long term objectives in line.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. I'm going to steal your point about dopamine rush, because that's exactly what it is. It's, you know, they are tactics, right? And the tactics don't drive structural change. They just drive tactical change. And they're important. But if you believe that, you know, take any large company, there's a lot of drivers of revenue in a large company. And if you take some digital stunt and generate a nice piece of revenue and a nice ROI, but it really is just a small piece of the overall pool, you can be incredibly proud of yourself because you have a great ROI story, but the CEO and the board are still sort of standing there looking at you saying, you know, this is a multi-billion dollar company. We're really happy about your 4-to-1 ROI in this really small space, but it's not the big picture. Stick with us for the big picture, right? And I think you see people chasing small ROI, small shiny objects, sort of for that dopamine piece, and just to try and cover their rear ends. But it's not really, it's not structurally working, right? Like, it's about the larger picture.
Yeah, no, well said. If it can't scale, then who gives a crap? I mean, not that you're saying that, but that's does not make a lot of sense.
You've seen it from the agency side, so.
Yeah, no, amen. But this was really fantastic. You know, I think people are going to learn a lot from this. So, John, thanks so much for making the time.
Jeremy, thank you for having me. It's great. Appreciate the time.
Thanks again to John for making the time. It's really interesting to see some of the things where when I escape from the agency world, as I say, to, you know, speak to some people who are still fighting the good fight and observing these things and seeing where marketing is going. If you like what you just heard and this is your first time here, be sure to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Stitcher, the choice is yours. And if you're a longtime listener, please remember to rate and review Future Proof, as that's the number one way we get the show in front of people just like you. Special thanks this week to our producers, Jason Stack and V. Cortuccio. Once again, I'm Jeremy Goldman, and you've been listening to Future Proof.